Without proper planning, the settlement of one's estate can be a costly, complicated, and contested process, much of which can be avoided by getting affairs in order. There are so many elements involved. Disposal of assets and naming heirs are just a part of it. When distribution of assets is questioned or challenged, it can become very, very complicated indeed, even nasty. We're talking about steps to take to make the process go as smoothly as possible before and after death, without confusion or rancor, by the way. Joining me in studio is attorney Lisa Babel. She specializes in trusts and specializing in trusts and estates litigation and is a principal with the Carmody McDonald Law Firm. Tina, thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
You're the one they call in when things have gone wrong, is the way it's explained to me.
That's pretty accurate, yes.
Well, what goes wrong most of the time?
So much. You would be surprised. We're seeing more and more in the courts right now where things are going wrong, when there's problems with disability, capacity, someone dies and there's infighting. It's a lot of family disputes with a lot of times, you know, someone stuck in the middle, a lot of times a parent, a sibling, someone, and families need to get involved. And sometimes it doesn't always go as smoothly as we wish.
Which means you have to be ready when the time comes for these things to be taken care of.
You hope so. You hope that you have a proper plan in place, like you said, a will, a trust, a power of attorney. Sometimes you don't, and then things go wrong, or you just have people acting badly when you do have them in place.
Can you give me an example, without naming names, obviously, of how badly things can go?
Oh, there are so many stories. We're seeing them in the media. I see them every day. But there are typical types of cases you see, one of which will be when dad has been married for some time and either mom dies or they get a divorce. And oftentimes dad then remarries, and you see that him then remarry someone who's younger than the children. And there is a family dispute there. You know, the children think that she's an interloper, that she's just there for the money. She thinks she's taking care of the father and she deserves, you know, an estate, or she deserves some money for being there. Mm-hmm. And you can see both sides of the dispute, but it can get really ugly. The dad changes his estate plan, even though he promised never to do it. Kids had no idea until death, and things get pretty heated. And then you air all the dirty laundry, and it's just not pretty.
But isn't all of this resolved and accommodated just through a will?
You hope so. But a lot of times when you have someone who's elderly, you have father who's getting up there in years, and maybe he didn't understand what he was doing. He would have never wanted to do this if he had capacity. But he started to slip. So did he really understand what he signed when he changed it, a plan that had been in place for 30 years? Did he really want to cut out his children? And that's when I would get involved, that, you know, maybe he did want it. Maybe he was completely fine. And even though you're getting up there in years, you have the right to make the change. You have the right to say who should get it. But, you know, maybe he wasn't okay. And that's when the dispute can happen.
Who typically would be your client in a case like this?
We represent any number of types of people. We represent a trustee. That can be a bank. It can be a person. We represent beneficiaries. We represent heirs, decedents. We also are seeing a lot more conservatorships and guardianships. So we will represent someone who is trying to get one over somebody, the ward, or we represent the ward themselves and trying to fight getting their rights taken away.
Is this done in probate court?
It is, yes. All of what I do is done within the court system. So almost all of it's in probate court. There's one exception, that will contests, when you're trying to fight whether a will is valid. Those happen in civil court, but oftentimes will be transferred over to probate.
These days, a will is important, but not necessarily enough. We hear a lot about trusts. How important are trusts in protecting the wishes of the decedent?
They are extremely important and essentially the wave of the future. Everyone needs a will, but what the will does nowadays is it transfers – a lot of times it pours over to the trust. The trust helps you avoid probate. Probate is expensive. It can be time-consuming. It can have a lot of problems involved within it. So what a trust does is it takes it out of the courts. So you hope that a trust will be in place to protect you outside of the court system.
There are several kinds of trusts, or at least a couple of different kinds of trusts.
Oh, there's so many numerous different types. And that's why estate planners are important. They sit down and they help you plan for your succession, for what works for you, because there's not a one-size-fits-all for any family. And they sit down and they talk to you and say, We recommend these two types of trusts or one type of trust, revocable, irrevocable. There's standard plans. There's so many different options. And you need to talk to an attorney on the front end so that when you die, it is seamless and what you want to have happen does in fact happen.
Is it possible that the estate planner, the lawyer you go to work all of this out, could be drawn into the case when you get to it to determine whether or not this person was competent when they were making these decisions?
Absolutely.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and a lot of times they're the main witness. You know, you've got a change in estate planners. Dad has seen attorney A for 40 years. New wife gets involved and she takes him to her attorney. So if there's a change then and we're challenging what Dad did, we're going to call that attorney as a witness. And there is an attorney-client privilege, but not in this instance. No. So we get to put him on the stand and say, was she in the room the entire time? Was she the one telling you what he wanted? You know, what actually happened? So they get put in the middle. And sometimes that's good. Sometimes that's bad.
So you can learn a lot, even with the attorney-client privilege being in effect there.
Yes.
I hear all the time that what you want your heirs to have to avoid is probate. Explain to our audience, if you would, exactly why that's not a process you want to go through.
Probate is, like I said, time-consuming. You have to get an attorney. Most people cannot figure it out on their own. There's just so many filing requirements.
Can I just stop you there to ask, before we get to that point, why does it have to go to probate in the first place? If you've got a will?
Sure. So you need to change title to most of the assets. Let's say Dad dies and he has an account in his name. You can't go to the bank and say, now it's mine. They don't believe you. Mm-hmm. You can't hand him the will and say, trust me, this is the will. They're not going to use it. They need a court order saying, now you're changing title. So you need to go through the process in order to get the assets, in order to resolve claims and creditors. So the process is in place for a necessary reason.
And for the heirs, the loss of assets is quite possible, at least some of them.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Including cash.
Oh, yes.
Where is that going?
Well, a lot of times it goes nowhere. It just sits there. And then banks try to get some determination on where it should go, but you need to go through the probate process in order to get a hold of it.
But wait a minute. If there's cash there, ultimately it has to go someplace, the probate court will decide where it's going to go. Does it go to the state, for instance?
Honestly, I don't know the answer to that question. Yeah. When I get involved, I try to get the cash and usually do it. I don't let it sit there.
Yeah. But there is potential for some of these assets to go to the state. Again, if I understand correctly,
Yes, I think that's probably right, yes. Yeah.
What about creditors?
Well, so the probate process allows creditors to make claims on the assets. So you might think Dad has $100,000 in an account, but if he has debts, you give them notice and they have the right to get that money first.
What about unmarried partners, gay and straight?
It's a difficult problem nowadays, which is why you need a will and a trust to actually protect what you want your estate plan to be. If you are a same-sex couple and you haven't gotten married yet for whatever reason, then the laws don't protect you. You are considered a roommate, if you will. So having an estate or a trust, make sure that you have that level of protection.
You mentioned a moment ago that guardianship and conservatorship are a couple of things that are coming into play now in particular. Why is that? Is it because of the baby boomer?
Absolutely. Yeah. You couldn't be more right. The largest growing population we have right now are individuals over 85. The reality of the situation is people who are elderly, when you're over 85, the new statistics are saying at least half of them can suffer from Alzheimer's. So what happens is you have people who are living longer, you have the baby boomers, which are obviously a large segment of the population, and they're losing capacity. They need someone to take care of them, and a lot of times they don't have a plan in place. So, you know, mom or dad or uncle or aunt needs something in place to either handle their finances, they can't handle them anymore, or they need someone to make sure they're getting the medications, to make sure, you know, they don't want to move into a home, but they need to move into a home. And that's where guardianship or conservatorship comes into play.
I thought conservatorship dealt with the other part of the age spectrum,
No, so
young people.
No. So the way it works is you can have a guardianship and conservatorship. A guardianship is over the person, meaning personal decisions, what medicines you need to take, what doctor you're going to see, who you're allowed to see, mm-hmm. where you live. Conservatorship is over the money. So you can have one or the other. A conservatorship takes complete control over all of your finances. So you want to go out to eat, you need to ask your conservator for that money. And that obviously takes away a lot of rights. So courts are trepidatious in just giving it because it's asked for, because it's such a huge constitutional issue in taking away those fundamental rights. But we're seeing them more and more. The commissioner out in St. Louis City said he's seen about 33% increase of just guardianships in the past few years.
Mm-hmm. Well, there are so many different areas that we can discuss here, and one that obviously is part of the equation is property, homes, cars, boats, whatever. How does this play into all of it? So all put in one pile?
You need to put it in a pile.
Yeah.
You need to meet with an attorney when you have assets, especially with different titling, to figure out what's going to happen if disaster strikes. What happens if you die? What happens if you lose capacity? And what an estate planner will do is walk you through the process and develop a plan for all of your assets. If you forget one, you forgot to tell someone that you have a boat and it's titled in your individual name, you're going to have to go through probate. And so that's what you want to avoid. It's titling is the trick there.
And also what you want to do is update with some frequency, I would suppose. Is there a rule of thumb about that?
So, yes. And you want to – you're, again, saying something that most people don't realize. You have to update for a number of reasons. One, your family situation's change. Two, the laws change. So a good estate planner will contact you every few years and just make sure that your family situation hasn't changed. But you want to always go back to your attorney if, say, you have a new child, you get remarried, you get divorced. You certainly don't want old dispositions that don't make sense for you anymore. So whenever anything changes in your life or when there's a change of law, that would be a good time to change or just to update. Make sure it says what you think it says.
Every couple of years?
Yeah, I would say every couple of years.
Yeah. I have a question here that has been emailed in. What about common law marriage?
Well, so that is a good question. Common law marriage is held differently in each different state. So it depends upon what state you're living in. That being said, if you have a will or a trust, you can account for that. If someone's going to tell you have a common law marriage, your trust can say, I don't want them to get anything. I don't want them to receive anything, or I want them to receive everything. And that's why you go through that process. Huh. You don't see a lot of common law marriage these days.
No, people just don't bother.
Well, there you go.
There you are. We have an email here from Madonna who writes, some folks don't want to choose a trustee from amongst their children because they feel it's showing favoritism towards one child. They don't want an outside trust administrator because it's a stranger in a personal family situation. So they throw up their hands and say the kids will just have to work it out after they're dead. That is a bad idea, correct?
You are right, and Donna's right, that is something that we see all the time. They don't want to favor one child over the other, or the siblings don't get along. They know one child is going to handle the estate the way they want better than the others. But when you do that, you're just essentially creating liability or issues or adversarial relationships. What I would suggest is you do get that neutral third party, a company, and small banks, small trust companies do a great job. And yes, you have to pay them money. But it is such a small fee, and they handle things correctly. They know what they're doing. It takes away that adversarial relationship that you know is going to be created if you name a child.
What grounds does one child have? Just claiming favoritism or trying to find some way in which that other child was favored?
So you have the right to name whoever you want.
Sure.
So you can name, your oldest child because you think they're the best. What happens then is the other two children who says, he was always favored, is they look for something that trustee does wrong. They didn't give me the silverware and I deserve the silverware. They didn't, do X, Y, or Z. And then you get a breach of trust. You find a way to find a lawsuit. And it's family dynamics. It seems wrong and a waste of time and money, but there's family disputes. And sometimes that child does act incorrectly. Mm-hmm. And it's how far do they have to go before the court actually gets involved.
What is the difference between an executor and a trustee?
So an executor is involved in the will process. A trustee is involved in the trust. They both have fiduciary duties. A trustee has most of their liabilities, duties, responsibilities spelled out in a large trust document. They're both governed by the probate code. They both have to do what's best for the beneficiaries, but they're just called different things because it's different documents.
Well, I want to get back to gossip, not using any names, but I'd like to hear another really good story of a family squabble that's knocked down, drag out.
There's so many. That's what I deal with. I'm trying to think what will translate well. I mean, what you see so many times are sibling infighting. You see litigation, and I almost went to trial once over a lamp. And trial is expensive. Mm. You know, you can spend $100,000 easy on going to court, calling witnesses, having experts. Mm. And when I was in California, I almost went to court over a lamp. It comes down to principle, right and wrong. Mom wanted me to have that lamp. And that's what you see. So what you want to do is you want to stop that on the front end. Now, sometimes you can't and it's just going to happen, but those are horrible situations.
Are people likely to squabble or get nasty over really tangible assets, valuable assets, or sentimental ones?
You see all kinds. It can be jewelry. It can be mom wanted me to have the house. Sometimes it's large sums of money. Sometimes it's very small amounts of money. This hits all economics because everyone has family relationships and, you know, family squabbles. So it can be anything. And we see all kinds, all types. And you try to counsel people, you know, if this is really what your mom or dad wanted, this is where we are. Sometimes it's not what mom and dad wanted, though, and that's when you get involved.
But sometimes the lamp has such great sentimental value, you'll spend $100,000 to contest it in court.
It's principle.
Yeah, it is. What is the timeline for probate? How long does that normally take? Is there a...
Probate take is quicker than the civil courts. Civil courts, I tell most people, on a complicated breach of contract case, it'll take 2 years to go through.
Wow.
Yeah. It's shocking to many people. It's not like TV where you file a lawsuit and then you're in trial. In probate, it's an expedited procedure. They're courts of equity. This is all they handle. They see these capacity, undue influence cases. And I tell most people a year, maybe a little bit more. It just depends on how far into the weeds we're going to get. How many documents do we need? How many doctors do I need?
And are there appearances before the probate court? I mean, the people who are involved on both sides of this issue, do they have to go to court X number of times?
You'd be surprised how often they do not have to go to court. Most appearances, and yes, we have appearances, are attorneys. And we're... The way it works in Missouri is we're talking to the judges, telling them what the issues are, and they make decisions, usually in chambers. But there are evidentiary hearings where clients will have to show up, but those are few and far between. It's essentially the attorneys doing all the fighting until the end of the day when you have trial, and they're there. That's their time to tell their story.
We only have 30 seconds left, and you may not want to answer this question, but what's the best advice you could give someone so as they don't have to come and see you at the end of the process?
There's two. One is communicate. If you can communicate with your children, with your beneficiaries, with your heirs, that will save so much of the surprise and hurt and anger down the road in this litigation. The second is see an attorney. And I know that sounds self-serving and people are afraid of how much it's going to cost. It is worth it, and it is not as expensive as many people think.
Pay me now or pay me later.
There you go.
All right. Tina Babel, thank you so much for being with us with the Carmen & McDonald Law Firm here in St. Louis. Most informative. Thank you so much.
Thanks.
Great to see you. Archive versions of past St. Louis On the Air programs available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org/STL on air. St. Louis On the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thank you for listening. I'm Don Marsh.